Hello and welcome to Simply Save, Money Control's personal finance podcast where we discuss all things money. Since we are close to International Women's Day, in this special episode, our discussion will be centered around women's money matters and their rights during marriage and also at the time of separation. Understand how women should approach their individual finances in order to safeguard their interests and rights. We have with us today senior family lawyer Mrinalini Deshmukh. Hello, Ms. Deshmukh. Welcome to Simply Save. It's great to have you on our show on this important occasion.
Thank you so much, Preeti. Thank you for inviting me and seeking my views on issues which I think are very relevant for every woman. And this initiative towards the International Women's Day, I think, makes it more significant. Thank you for giving me this opportunity.
Thank you. Since you mentioned these issues already, could you start with some of the most common causes of marital disputes?
Okay. Before I start with the common cause of marital disputes, let me tell you that these disputes have been long-standing. Maybe my generation, earlier generation, and so on and so forth. What is the difference is that now they are coming in the forefront, and people are not either afraid or ashamed, or the fear of society, family, etc. is not there, and they do want to sort of, you know, address it in a very sort of, you know, open manner, because they do not want to sort of suffer in silence as some of the generations earlier had done. So the common issues for as far as the marital disputes are concerned range from common ground is incompatibility, ranges from lack of physical intimacy in the relationship. They range from behavior of one spouse, which is causing exceedingly, you know, high degree of grief and agony to the other person. There is a third person in the marriage, as we call it, the adulterous or extramarital relationship. In some extreme cases, there is domestic violence. Now, domestic violence, as understood by a common person, is normally a physical violence. But it is understood in a different manner by the law, and that is by the Act, which we'll come to a little later, which includes not only a physical violence, as in, you know, somebody bashing up, but it also includes emotional violence, mental violence, financial violence. So all these different kinds of violences which are there. And I think these are more or less the, or somebody abandoning and going without a reasonable cause. In some cases, we also find that one of the spouses, either prior to marriage or post-marriage, develops, you know, some kind of mental health issues. And those mental health issues could be quite scary for the person who's suffering. I mean, the patient himself and also the spouse who is there. Right. And so these are the various grounds or the disputes or the issues that come up in a marriage which compels them to knock the doors of the lawyer or a counselor, as the case may be.
Okay. And how often is money the cause of breakdown in marriages? Financial?
Yes. Yeah. So when I said, you know, when I was discussing violence, I said financial violence.
Right.
Now the financial violence is, of course, so I'll tell you what, most of them, except abandonment and mental health and adultery, most of them are in a way also connected with money. Because sometimes somebody, suppose the wife is a homemaker and she's not working. However, she is looking after the home. She's taking care of everything. At the same time, her husband is a sole earning member. He becomes a very controlling person, and he does not give her the money. He makes her beg and grovel and cry and makes her feel about it. And such kind of things are also happening. In some extreme cases, a wife blindly trusts her husband to do all the financial dealing for her. Sometimes there is, you know, that trust is lost because of certain actions. And lastly, and more importantly, it is also, as I always say in all my addresses across, is that financial independence of the woman is absolutely the need of the hour. Whatever little or big that you earn, you must have a financial independent. You must be financially independent, and you must be able to at least survive, if not, you know, thrive in this situation.
Right. And since you've already touched upon some mistakes that women make, could you elaborate a little more on typical mistakes that you've seen women make during the course of their marriage, which you touched upon already, and also at the time of separation?
So what are the mistakes that women make? Now, for that, you have to understand a little bit about how the society is. This cannot be a legal answer. Now, for example, when a girl gets, and let's say typically, even in arranged marriage or love marriage, I mean, I will not be able to sort of distinguish between that. But even if those marriages which are there, a girl gets married to a person, and normally in our Indian culture of society, she gets married also into a family. Okay, it's not like a Western concept that it's only husband and wife. So in some cases, when the girl's parents or the girl gets married, her expectations of a lifestyle or her expectations of her financial comforts are those that the family sees. Okay, so they get into it, everything is fine, hunky-dory, etc., etc. However, when, God forbid, situation arises where either the husband goes to the court for divorce or the wife goes to the court for divorce or separation, and then the income of the husband is brought on the table of the court, of the judge, then they find that it cannot be compensating for the lifestyle that she has led. So the belief that she was there, that this is going to be my lifestyle, comes crashing down before her eyes when she realizes that the courts are only going to be concerned about what the income of the husband is, and accordingly they will be dealing with that. That is point number one. Point number two, what happens is that when you get into a marriage, either the husband self-acquired or say what he gifted, inherited, etc., remains in his single name. And I'll tell you the flip side also. Very few husbands would buy an apartment or buy an asset and make the wife as a joint owner, even though she has not contributed anything. Some of the cases we have realized that where the wives were made the joint owners without any financial contribution, when it came to a court of law, sometimes the courts looked at it from different angles, that because her name is there, does she get a 50% right in that asset? Or because she has not contributed, what are her rights in terms of the property laws, things like that. So that is the other thing that one needs to understand. Thirdly, and more importantly, most of the times, even in working couples, the finances are joint. Now, don't get me wrong when I say that, because I've seen this, I see this every day in my experience as a lawyer. When the dispute arises, then the question of a joint finances, there could be swindling away of the entire amount, if we are talking about to protect the woman here, from the husband. In some cases, it is also the wife. And then it becomes difficult to say that from the joint finances, what percentage was mine, what percentage was yours, and so on and so forth. So I believe, and as an advice that I would like to give to all women over here, that yes, you have trust and faith and belief in your husband. I'm sure things will be absolutely hunky-dory and nobody will shortchange you. But that does not stop you. And you should, as a matter of principle and a matter of propriety, have an independent account which you can handle, where you can sort of, if you're an earning woman, put a part of it. Suppose you're earning $100, you may choose to contribute $50 or 50 rupees for the household expenses in the joint account. The remaining 50 could be kept in here or whatever. I'm just giving you an example. Or if you make some money in terms of dividend shares, etc., invest it. Because it is very important for every woman to have her finances, which are intact, over which she has an exclusive control. So this I'm advising without disturbing the basic fabric of the family, where people work on trust and faith. Now that's fine, and we really hope and pray it happens. But if it doesn't happen, then I don't want that woman to be suffering because she feels shortchanged and because she has given it completely. Now this happens most of the times in case of husbands who invest in the name of the wife, and a wife is basically a homemaker. If he does invest, then I think that's good, then at least she can have something of it. But if she doesn't, invest, he can't be telling her that, listen, I'm giving you roti, kapda, makan, and you are happy, and you can be there. She needs her own finances because she is devoted herself to the home. to the husband, to the family, to the children. And because she is doing a homemaker's job, which is not paid, and she's doing it out of her love and affection. And I'm not saying she's doing it as a professional or some other duty or service. But just because she is not paid does not mean she should financially secure, because she's investing her time, energy for the family. And as a result of which, surely there has to be, if not compensation, if that's too loose a word, then at least gratitude and safety and security.
Right. And you spoke about financial independence. So how can women who do draw an income or a salary, safeguard their financial interests when the going is good, when they are not facing any marital crisis?
So that's what I'm saying. You should have a healthy discussion with your spouse. And today, both the husband and wife are educated. They understand. And you have to say that this is nothing about you. This is nothing about me. But we have seen this situation. So I would say that I'm earning $100. You are earning $200, $300. You may choose to put a part of it for you also. I'm not saying no. But I surely want to put 30% or 40% or 50% of my income in a separate independent entity. If you think you have, you are earning much more than me, and you also want to contribute to my independent account, which is there, I would be happy. But that's completely up to you. But let me keep something for me for my rainy day. And God forbid there is a family issue, there is some last minute trouble, of course I'll contribute from my individual fund. But that would be more of a safety safeguard for me for my future.
Having separate bank and investment account would be key to protecting their interests throughout the marriage.
I'll tell you what happens. Most of the time, the spouses put the other's name as a joint holder. Mm-hmm. The reason being that suppose something happens to me, my spouse can get that, and there is not much of a legal hassle and things like that. And there is a security which is created for the spouse. But sometimes I also see that when things go very sour, that it is my money and that cannot go to her. And obviously she cannot get whatever she feels she should get. So I'm not suggesting that you do not contribute. I'm not suggesting you do not contribute to the house. If you're earning, you can give 50% of your expenses for the household. But keep some amount for you, your investment, and your, with complete confidence of your husband, taking him into confidence and telling him. Ideally, if husband and wife share what their wealth is, what they have with each other, that would be the best thing. But, sometimes I find nowadays there's so much of mistrust, even when the going is great, because there is that little uncertainty that looms in what happens, God forbid, if such a situation arises, it gets into a separation, what would be my protection at that point of view? That's what I'd
Right. And at the time of seeking divorce, what are the legal rights that women should be aware of in terms of their share in property, future maintenance, and so on?
Okay. So, under the existing law, that we have for the women, and some of the laws are made specially for the women because that's what the provision in the Constitution of India is. And those special laws which are made for the women and other, is the right of maintenance in case of divorce, alimony, and in case of, sometimes where there is domestic violence, you get maintenance and also compensation for the violence which is perpetrated. So there are various provisions in law, if I may say so. Under the Hindu Marriage Act, you can get maintenance during the petition, during the period when the petition is pending. After the divorce is granted, you will get alimony, which could be per month, or it could be a lump sum, or it could be a combination of two. There are independent proceedings where you don't even go under the divorce, or you don't even go under the separation. But you are entitled to get maintenance from your husband. That is Section 125 of the Criminal Procedure Code. And the other one is Section 18 of the Hindu Adoption Maintenance Act, where without touching the status of the marriage, a wife is entitled. And lastly, as I said earlier, that if the courts come to a conclusion that there has been domestic violence perpetrated on the woman at the end of the trial, etc., then they may feel it just that they grant some compensation to the woman towards what that she has undergone. So these are the various sort of enactments and things where the court grants alimony, maintenance, etc.
Okay. And does her status as an earning person, as somebody who draws an income, make any difference to the amount of alimony or maintenance?
Of course, it does. Because you have to understand that maintenance under the Indian law is for the woman who is unable to maintain herself in the same style and dignity as she has been doing in the past.
Right.
Okay. Now, while coming to that conclusion what are the factors that the courts look into? And these are the factors mentioned in the law book or in the statute itself. Number one, income of the husband. Number two, income of the wife. Number three, reasonable wants of the claimant. Claimant in most cases is the wife. And their standard of living. What are the compulsory deductions or things which he has to pay? For example, income taxes. The husband has to pay income tax. If there is an EMI for the house, he has to pay that. So consider all those compulsory deductions. Certain cases like where you have financial insurance claim, etc., those things. So all these factors are considered. So it is not that there is just a blanket thing, whether you earn or you don't earn, you get that X amount. If you earn, surely you may be your maintenance alimony aspect may be rejected, or you may be granted a smaller amount, considering that you have sufficient income of your own, or not sufficient, but income of your own, but not sufficient enough to take care of your expenses and your livelihood in the same lifestyle. And in that scenario, the court grants an X amount to the wife.
All right. And moving away from this scenario of separation or divorce, if we were to talk about a situation where woman's parents or husband die without a will, then what are the rights of the woman to those properties and assets?
No, so those are the laws which are governed by the Succession Act. And as you are aware, the marriage law, Succession Act are based on our personal laws. So let us take an example of a Hindu Succession Act. I'm just taking this as an example. That suppose if the husband, okay, dies intestate is without leaving a will, then all his assets are distributed in as per the clause one heir, that is the mother of the husband, if she is there, the wife of the husband who is there, and the children. So all four of them are equal claimants of the husband's assets. In case of a woman dying intestate in a Hindu case, it's vice versa. So it is always advisable for both the parties to leave a will so that to ensure that none of the other legal heirs which you don't want the money to go to can make any claims in a court of law.
So if a woman were to die intestate, then her family, that is her parents and her siblings perhaps, won't have rights to her property. Only her husband's family will, is it?
And the children, no?
And the children.
So that's family, husband and children.
Husband and children. So which is why you underline the importance of will.
Thanks a lot for all the insights, Ms. Deshmukh. I'm sure our listeners will find them useful. And with that, it's a wrap on this episode of Simply Save. For more news, views and updates, do stay logged on to moneycontrol.com.